would you like to go another 15 after 1 o'clock, after 2 o'clock, or do you want to go 30? Because obviously this is going to go longer. So tell me what you want to do, or do you want to stop it at 1 o'clock? Go on? All right. Do you want see a raise of hand whether you want to go 15 minutes first. Oh, you want to go 30 minutes? All right. We're going to go to 2:30. With that, the chair recognizes microphone 2.
Thank you. Dave Dalzell from Abilene, Texas. This is for both candidates. I'm a little unique. I wear the pin as the current president of my local association of 310 members, and I'm blessed also at the same time wear the badge of the executive committee of the National Association of Realtors. And my question, what my members back home want to know, is what would you do to further and strengthen the relationship of the National Association with the local association?
Jim, you go first.
Thanks, Dave. You know, I was in Texas a couple of weeks ago, and I just want to say to you, because I know you know Bill Jones real well. He's a good friend of mine. Those of you who don't know Bill Jones, Bill had a heart attack the week after I was in Texas. I'm not sure what that means, but he is recovering, which is a good thing. Sometimes I think the National Association, rightfully so, by the way, is perceived to speak down to the local associations. I struggle with that. I think this has to come from the bottom up. I will tell you, years ago, probably 10 or 15 years ago, the National Association used to send staff and some members out to local association and local association members' offices to hear what was going on in the local field. And then they would bring that back so that really the flow came from the bottom up rather than from top down all the time. I think we need to get back to that. I think there's a huge problem when the National Association of Realtors dictates all the time what should happen at the local level. The local level is a point of contact for our members. If we don't understand what the local folks need, want, believe makes them relevant, keeps their businesses going, then we're not doing our job at the National Association level. And we can't do that talking down to them. We need to have them speak up to us. It's easy to say, oh, they can do that. They sit on the board of directors and they sit in committees. But it doesn't work that way. You have to be in their offices and talk to them. And I think we need to figure out how to get back to doing that again. Thank you.
Tom?
I think that we made great strides last year. Sometimes there's consequences that you don't expect that are really, really good. You know, we had the citizens ruling, and because of that, we had to change our business model as an association. And I'm looking at Kathy Watley here, thanks to her great work. We came up with something called My Realtor Party. Prior to that, I think that there was a lack of trust sometimes between the three levels. I think last year we made great, great strides in showing how the locals, the state, and the National Association can work together to accomplish great things. In my 35 years, I don't think I've ever seen a time when the three levels worked so well together and the results were unbelievable. At the last board of directors meeting, you heard me report that 500 associations asked for over 3,000 of our resources. I would not be candid with you if I told you that we ever expected that much success in the first year. So to be able to have a product or an initiative, I should really say, where so many people were engaged and got such great results, and I'm sure this year's numbers, when we're all done, will blow last year's numbers away, I think it's a great start for that relationship building you're talking about, Dave.
Microphone 3.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for being here. Thank you for what you're doing. It's a great sacrifice, and we know it. I'm Michael About from Colorado. And having just served in this position with some wonderful leaders, I'd like to ask you, what year were you regional vice president, and what did you do to bring your members and your states together? As one of my mentors would say, it is about the members.
Is this question for both candidates?
For both candidates, is fine.
Thank you.
Well, when I was regional vice president, I had surgery. Everybody felt really bad for me, and they all came forward. It was great. But I will tell you, we enhanced our regional conference that year. And since that point, every year after, it's gotten bigger and bigger. So I'm real proud of pretty much starting it all over again back then.
Jim? Thank you. I want to go back to one thing before I forget. Nobody mentioned this today, and I think it's important. If we did anything better than we ever could have in the last year, it would be the Rethink program. It was the first opportunity for local members, people to sit inside of NAR's four walls and say, this is what you need to change. And I don't want to miss that point, because Rethink has been a great program, and I think it brings back what we need to do on behalf of our members. Michael, to your question, I was regional vice president in 2001. And if I did nothing else, I worked my tail off to make sure that my local association and my state association knew every single week what we were doing from the national level down. I look at the RVPs as someone who is there to make sure that the flow of information goes in both directions. It shouldn't just come from NAR down. We should be coming from the local and state association back up to NAR and letting them know what's going on there too. And I think we need to improve on that. It gets back to what I said a few moments ago. We need to make sure that the local associations and state associations, through their RVP, because the RVP is the conduit between the local, state, and national, we need to make sure that that role is fulfilled. And as you know, Michael, you've just been an RVP. The RVP's jobs continue to grow each year. But I will tell you, there is not a more important thing than for them to make sure that they communicate and connect with their members on a regular basis at the local and state level, because without that, that's why the RVPs exist to begin with. So thank you. It's a great question.
Mata recognizes microphone one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Judy Moore from Lexington, Massachusetts, and my question is to both of you. And my question is, today, I believe it's May 16th, 2013, what is the one thing that you would do to help our members? What can NAR do to help our members increase their profitability and productivity? And I would like to hear that one gem.
Jim, you go first.
Judy, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the second thing you said. I apologize.
Profitability and productivity.
Okay, thank you. I couldn't hear the second. Productivity is what you said, I think. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think we've done a lot in the past. I was part of the Second Century Initiatives. I was part of the Right Tools Right Now. They were a good fix at the time when our markets were down and our members needed help. I think right now, though, things have changed significantly. I think now we need to make sure, and they go hand in hand, two things happen. Number one, that the consumer understands the relevance of our membership and what we do on behalf of them every day. And I don't care if you're a buyer's agent or a seller's agent. It's all about making sure that they understand that. And then we need to make sure that NAR becomes more relevant, because that will flow down to the point I just made. Until we get to the point where the public again believes that the National Association of Realtors, the state associations of realtors, and their local association of realtors really is relevant, and that they are first in the mind every single day when a real estate transaction is coming into place, I think we've got a problem. And I think we need to work on relevancy in a big way.
Tom?
Judy, if I understood the question, you said today, and what I would say for today's profitability would be, number one, get the three talking points that we have on the table to all your legislators. If this country ever lost FHA, our members' profitability would be horribly affected. If we lost MID, our profitability would be affected. So The other thing that I think is really, really important for everybody to realize, you know, we're happy that in a lot of pockets across the country, the short sale foreclosure process is slowing down, you know, and maybe going to be out of the way in a few years. But we learned something really, really important there, I believe. I believe that the lesson learned was that our connection, our lines of communications with lenders, they're not good. They're not good. The leadership teams the last few years met with lenders time and time and time again. And quite candidly, they were very frustrating meetings. And I think that We can't stop meeting with lenders right now because someone says, well, there's not that many short sales in my area anymore. I think it's extremely important to continue those conversations because there's something else called mortgage liquidity. And it's one thing if we phase out short sales and maybe the foreclosure process eliminates a lot of properties in the marketplace. But if we don't have mortgage liquidity in this country, that's going to directly affect the pocketbooks of our members. So I think those things are real important today.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Microphone two.
My name is Michael Teer. I'm from Riverside, California, and my question is for both. What do you think we've learned in the past 6 years from the REO and the short sales markets?
Pretty much what I just said. As far as what I learned, having had the opportunity to meet with a lot of the banks on behalf of the membership the last couple of years, is that our relationship with the banks in this country is nowhere near what it should be, and we've got to continue to work on it.
Jim? Mike, thank you. I was part of the leadership team as treasurer when we first started meeting with the banks. We met with the big three at the beginning. It was horribly frustrating. It was incredibly frustrating. I don't think we can stop meeting with them, but I will tell you this. There are other things we need to do. We can't. We are a little bit of a victim of our own success in some ways. I want to see FHA get fixed. I want to see GSE reform occur. I want to see all those things happen. I want to see us retain MID. But we can push as hard as we want, and we will continue to do that because it will be best for our members. But I think long term, we need to realize that we cannot control every single thing that happens. But we darn well better use strong leadership to do the best we can to make sure we've tried as hard as we can. And I think to that extent, we need to work on that. And we need to always work on that.
Thank you, Bill.
Microphone four.
Ronnie Thompson from North Carolina. For both candidates, if you're elected and have served your year as president of NAR, what would you consider your greatest achievement or accomplishment and why?
Jim? Boy, you know, Ronnie, that's it's an interesting question because it's like somebody saying to me, what's your program going to be in 3 years in 2016? If I had that crystal ball, I would not be here. I'd be sitting on a yacht somewhere enjoying my life probably. But I will tell you that if I can accomplish one thing, it would make sure that the members knew that NAR cared enough to do the absolute best they could do and that they were able to show that to the members. And that gets back to some of the other things I've said in the past. We have to find a way to make sure that we do, number one, what our members need, but that they can feel that we're doing that as well. You know, we talk a lot about the realtor family, and the realtor family is important. And I'll talk more about that later on. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of people don't feel like we're part of the family. And I should say it differently. They don't feel like we're part of the family. We need to fix that. Because when they don't feel like they're part of their association, they don't feel like there's a reason to belong to this association. And whether we want to admit it on a daily basis or not, and I do, this association is the largest and the greatest association in the world. And we need to make sure that they understand there is a reason to exist. Thank you.
Ronnie, short of some catastrophe happening in 2016 that we don't know about, simply put, I'd like my legacy at the end of that year to be that there's never been a president that got so many people involved.
Microphone three.
Yes, my name is Ryan Brashear from Augusta, Georgia. And my question is, I'm a member of YPN, and through YPN and involvement at the State Association, I've gotten more involved at NAR. So I've seen the tremendous obligations that fall upon the president of this association. So my question is, given those obligations and given the sacrifice you have to make to serve in this capacity, what is the main reason why you have chosen to seek this office?
Is that to both candidates?
Yes.
It's real simple. I don't do anything in my life that I don't think I can make a positive difference for the members. I had a specific reason that got me 100% convinced I wanted to be president. Without being melodramatic, I woke up one day about 6-7 years ago, and there was something called the short sale that was going on. And I saw people that I knew that had been realtors for 25, 30 years. Great realtors. And due to circumstances beyond their control, whether he or she had 10 deals in the pipeline that just couldn't get closed, and 6 months later never made a dime, or a spouse lost a job, but people who had sold the American dream were losing their own house. And I just said, this is wrong. And it was at that moment I said, you know what? We need grassroots leadership. We need people that are in the field on a daily basis that understand what every one of us goes through, because nobody can represent you better than somebody that walks the same path you do. Now, if I didn't feel I could make a positive impact for the membership, then I wouldn't have run. So that's the underlying goal, but that specific incident was what's really spurred me.
Jim?
You probably heard me say earlier that I'm a third-generation realtor, and I have a fourth-generation, my son, in the business now, Mike. From the time I was a little boy, I was taught, give back to your industry. I want to give back to my industry, and I think I, too, can make a positive impact on people and a positive impact in our association and in the world and in the industry we live as it relates to real estate. You know, it's interesting. I know both Tom and I get asked this the same question you asked all the time. It's not a new question, but it's a good question. I think we all have something different to offer. I think we all come to the table with something different. I think I come to the table with a passion and a commitment and the experience that no other candidate right now has. And I would encourage you to look at the qualifications and experience if you don't believe that. And I don't say that disrespectfully to anyone in any candidate position anywhere. I say that just purely factual. I'm very pragmatic about that stuff. Probably too pragmatic. I probably don't smile enough when I say that. But the fact is that experience is important. Qualifications are important. But you know what? You better have a commitment, a long-term commitment to what this association stands for if you want to be president of this association. I have a long-term commitment to RPAC, a long-term commitment to education, a long-term commitment to leadership, and a passion that grows every single day. And I will not let that go by the wayside without helping realtors and people at home that need help every day. I'm in the street every single day, listing and selling, leasing, managing, and appraising real property. Every single day. Go to my website and look at what my website says, my company website, HelselRealEstate.com. It's easy. You'll see what we do on a daily basis. You'll see my list of clients. You'll see how I work every day with clients and customers who need help. I was doing short sales back in 2000 with Polly. Some of you probably heard that story if you're here from California. She didn't know that she was doing short sales. All she knew was her husband died, and he left her with a negative mortgage on a number of things. We did short sales for 2 years with Polly. Polly called me about, now it's been about 4 or 5 months ago. 4 months ago, it was in January. She said, Jim, what are you doing now? I said, well, I'm sitting at my desk writing a contract. And I was writing a listing contract. She said, no, what are you doing? I said, well, what do you mean? And she asked me what I was doing at NAR and actually at PAR, my state association. And I said, why do you ask that? And she said, Jim, I just watched television and the National Association of Realtors had an ad on TV about home ownership and how it matters. And she thanked me to the point where she had me crying on the phone. She said, you know, Jim, you saved my life. She said, I wouldn't have a home to live in right now if you had not helped me in 2000. And if you don't believe the story, that's okay. I'll put you in touch with Polly. But it's a true story. Polly is about 80 years old right now. 78, I think she is, actually. And Polly still works at H&R Block to help pay her loans as a tax prep. She said, Jim, this is the last year I'm going to do this. I want to thank you and your association for what you do. She broke my heart. How can you not love an association and want to give back? How can you not have the passion and the commitment and the experience when somebody takes the time to call you and tell you what your association's done? And that's just one example, so thank you for the question.
Microphone one.
Good afternoon. Thank you both for putting your lives on the line over the past year. I know it's been a tough one for both of you. My name is Linda Page. I'm from Rhinebeck, New York, in the beautiful Hudson Valley, and this question is for both of you. I don't think there's anybody in this room that doesn't agree that one of the major things that we do is our lobbying advocacy, which includes going to Congress. I'd like to know what your experience is in terms of testifying in front of Congress and what the issues were that you testified about. Thank you.
I think that you first is
okay. Well, thank you. I've testified before Congress three times on behalf of the National Association of Realtors, for Charles McMillan, who asked me to do it on his behalf, and for Vicki Cox-Golder, who did. The issues were three. The first one was on illiquidity in the marketplace. This was in 2009 when we all couldn't get money to save our souls, no matter what we were doing or who we were. The second issue related to the Small Business Lending Act. The Small Business Lending Act, if you don't know, was an act that infused $25 billion into our industry, into the banking industry, I should say, which allowed our members and our clients of our members to find money to do small business loans, which was not existing before that. And the third time I testified was on sustainability in real property. And they called on me to do that because at that time they realized that I had chaired the committee that built the building for Washington, D.C. headquarters, the National Association of Realtors building, which I chaired that committee. And they knew that they knew that I had chaired it, and that building was the first LEED certified building in the District of Columbia. So that's why I was asked to do that the third time. So the short answer is three times.
I testified one time in December of 2011, and the topic was 30-year fixed mortgages and GSE reform. Thank you.
Okay, the chair recognizes microphone two.
Some of the things that you've been saying recently were connected with my question, but I'll continue with it in one way. We've been talking about very big things.
Please let us have your name.
Oh, Toby Bradley, California. We've been talking about very big things and very internal things. We've just started turning to kind of outward things that our members, I think, need. What specifically do you see both of you doing in relation to the government? You talked about the lenders, but things like what's going to potentially happen with FHA, Fannie Mae, Freddie, the MIPs continuing. What are we going to do so the member on the street can see concretely why we're helping them and how we're helping them?
Tom,
I think, Toby, that was the whole purpose of the initiative last year, which is, like I say, growing each year. Because we incorporate the local and the state in that initiative, the local associations see action right there in front of them. I had the opportunity, both Jim and I were in Illinois a few weeks ago, and the Illinois GAD, I may be off on some of the numbers, but he mentioned that throughout the state, I think they had something like 63 independent expenditure races that year, or 66, they won 53. And everybody in the room started clapping because he said, we would have never achieved this without the help of NAR. So I think that initiative is going to be really, really helpful for the member on the street. Now, with that said, I will tell you that there's some concern on my part because last year we've done as an organization more than we've ever done before. We've done more independent expenditures than we've ever done before. But because the game has changed with corporate funds, we went in Washington right here from number 7 in independent expenditure funding, if you will, to number 25. So think about that. We've done more than we've ever done before, but we've dropped 18 slots here in Washington. So that's a challenge. That's a challenge.
Those of you who know me know that even when I served on the RPAC trustees at the national level, and I still do at my state association, know that I've worried for years about regulatory changes more than I do about legislative changes. I think the regulators have a much better chance of playing with our business than the legislature does, whether it's a state or federal level. You know, Missouri had a great program for transfer tax. Even at my own local association, and I don't know, is my local association dad here? Sherry, are you in the room? She probably sees me enough, she left. Even in our local association, simple things like point of sale, which gets back to how the realtor party issues, Vote, Act, Invest, have helped us. Even at my local association issue, we had point of sale issues, which we defeated because of what we've been able to do with government agencies through the realtor party and what's happened with those monies. I would say to our association, the National Association, this is not the time to worry as much about legislation as it is about regulation. I'm not suggesting we turn our back on legislation. Please don't hear that. What I'm saying is that the regulators can change our business in a heartbeat without us doing much. And if we don't pay attention to the Fannie Mae's and the Freddie Mac's and the Ginnie Mae's and the FHA and all those groups who with regulation can really just mess around with our business, we've got a problem. So while I think we need to take a hard look always at what goes on up on Capitol Hill, I would remind you, don't turn your back on the regulators. And I think we need to refocus a lot on that. We've got a great guy in Joe Ventrone. He knows every single person that there is in the regulatory bodies in D.C. But Joe won't be here forever either. Someday Joe will retire. And when he does, we need to make sure we have people who are ready both at the grassroots level and at the NAR level to take up those issues, because they will be here. Thank you.
Microphone 4 in the rear.
Bob McMillan from Decatur, Alabama. I'd like this a question for both candidates. Increasingly, we're seeing global trade and global trade in the real estate industry as well. So I'd like to see where you see NAR's role in the emerging and continuing global markets.
Jim, you go first.
Well, I think the world has shrunk a lot. And I think we need to realize the world has shrunk. My experience is pretty good, actually. On behalf of Charles McMillan and on behalf of Vicki Cox-Golder, I had the opportunity to travel some internationally for NAR. I helped negotiate and I signed several bilateral agreements. And if you don't know what a bilateral agreement is, NAR has about 85 of them around the world right now. Those bilateral agreements say to those other countries, this is how you will treat our members when we come there, and this is how we will treat your members when you come to the United States. I did that in Brazil. I did it in Istanbul, Turkey, and I was involved in many other places. I think the global economy and the global world of real estate is our future. If you live in any bordering state right now, you feel it already. But if you don't live in a border state, you will feel it soon. I can tell you right now, in Pennsylvania, which is certainly not a border state, we have the Japanese and the Germans coming in and wanting to buy. You need to understand how the global economies exist. I've had the opportunity to travel. I've got friends all around the world who are leaders in the global economy of real estate, and I've got a lot of experience there because of that. Thank you for the question.
I would agree that global is huge right now. We're at a point where we're one marketplace. We're no longer separate marketplaces. We're one marketplace. Being from South Florida, 20 years ago, I was teaching classes on how to deal with international buyers. I'm proud to say that when I was president of Florida, I was the first president to, at the time, doesn't seem like a lot of money now, but it seemed like an awful lot of money back then. Have a global, we called it international back then, but an international budget that exceeded $100,000. So it's huge. It's here. It's all one marketplace in the world.
This will be the last question asked of microphone 3, and then the candidates will have a 3-minute conclusion. Pardon me? Well, we're going to ask the audience what they think. Let me just say this. All of those that want to do it the way I explained, please raise your hand. All those that want to go ad infinitum, raise your hand. I'm sorry, microphone 1. I understand, and there are a lot of others that do too, but thank you very much. The chair recognizes microphone three. Microphone three.
Tom Pletchfield, North Carolina. This question is for both candidates. As a new NAR director and from a state who has not endorsed a candidate, what is my role in this voting process?
Tom, you're first. To vote for me on Saturday morning. For all you need to know. You know, I'm sure you're a very well-educated individual. If I were your president in your state and you asked me that question, I would say, listen to what you hear today. Ask a lot of people in the hallways who know both Jim and I. Get as much input as you possibly can. Listen to what we both have to say Saturday morning, and you make a decision in your heart that you think is the best for a million members.
It's easy to echo what Tom said, but I'll be more specific. On my website, my campaign website, by the way, has a link which takes you to NAR's responsibilities and duties of a National Association of Realtors director. I would encourage everyone in this room to do that. Specifically, the responsibilities and the duties of the NAR directors are to take off your local hat, take off your state association hat, and put on your National Association of Realtors hat, which says you don't represent your local association, you don't represent your state association, you represent what is best for all of the members of the National Association of Realtors. That is our job as directors in this association when we are here, and I would encourage each of you, if you have not read that, to go read it, and I would encourage each of you to abide by what the NAR directors are supposed to do. Thank you for the question.
Because the lady at microphone one has been so tenacious and so patient, we're going to actually let you ask the last question.
Hot damn. My name is Darlene Breen, and I'm from Dayton, Ohio. I've had my license for 37 years. When I became licensed, this will be a question for Jim. When I became licensed, I felt that I wanted to make sure that everything I did made our profession more professional. I'm one of those single moms that Tom talked about. One of the most important things that I have done as a realtor has been to support RPAC. My Ohio license plate is RPAC. And the levels that we have mean the world to our members and what we can perform in the legislature and for private property rights. I've been a Golden R member for 7 or 8 years. I'm a President's Circle, and I'm a Hall of Fame member. I put my money into RPAC when I should have been somewhere else. Last year, I couldn't afford to be a President's Circle member, which broke my heart. And for you to say that those levels don't mean anything from all of these people that have worked so hard to get this build up, our slogan is, if you are a realtor as your profession, politics is your business.
The question was directed to Jim.
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you think about RPAC, Jim?
Well, kind of said it, Darlene. I guess what I would say was, I mentioned this earlier, I've been a very long-time contributor. I'm an 8-time Golden R, 7-time President Circle. I'm in the Hall of Fame since 2009. I love everybody who gives to RPAC, though, at every level. I would always encourage you, if you can't invest at a large level, invest at a small level. Show that RPAC is important to your fellow realtor. Make sure that we all invest in RPAC at some level. That is much more important to me than whether you give $5,000 and $2,000 as an RPAC Golden R and a President's Circle. I want to get you on the ladder. I want you to understand the value of RPAC. And the sooner we get people on the ladder, the sooner they begin to understand the value of RPAC. So I would encourage you to invest no matter what the level is. I love you gold NARS. I'm one of you. I love you President Circles. But the fact is, I want everyone to invest. So if it's $15, that's okay. If it's $25, that's okay. If it's $5,000, that's okay too. But show that you care in our industry. Make sure you invest in the insurance that will save our industry and our association and make us stronger. Thank you.